You're listening to Beyond Bourbon Street, an insider's guide to New Orleans. Beyond Bourbon Street is the podcast where we explore the food, music, culture, places, and people that make New Orleans unique. Whether you are planning a trip, living in New Orleans, or simply wanting a taste of the Crescent City from wherever you are, you've come to the right place. And now, your host, Mark Bologna.
Hey y'all, this is Mark. Welcome to episode 199. Today's episode is all about answering your questions about New Orleans and beyond. The last show was a holiday special where we highlighted why the holidays are a good time to visit New Orleans. If you missed it, go back and give it a listen. I think you'll enjoy it. Before we jump in, let me talk about the people that make this show possible. First up, support comes from the Historic New Orleans Collection, the city's premier history museum located at 520 Royal Street in the heart of the French Quarter. Check out their online publication called First Draft. It's a combination blog and online exhibition space that's really well done. You can find it at hnoc.org/firstdraft. From December 8, 2023 and running through May 10, 2024, check out their exhibit titled The Mystic Brotherhood, Fraternal Orders of New Orleans. For centuries, Freemasons, Odd Fellows, and other similar fraternal organizations have contributed to the network of benevolent and mutual aid societies that cradle New Orleans' social, cultural, and civic life. Through objects and images from their collection, the new exhibition explores the sometimes hidden history of these organizations and illuminates how they help shape today's city. Additionally, the permanent exhibit on the French Quarter life is an immersive experience well worth the visit. As always, the Historic New Orleans collection is free. Go to hnoc.org/visit to plan your trip. The most frequent questions I get are about moving to New Orleans. If you're ready to make the move, you need a good realtor, and that's where Liz Wood comes in. Let Liz and her team over at Liz Wood Realty help you find the right place. They can help whether you plan to rent or purchase. Look, New Orleans is a terrific city, but finding the neighborhood that's the best fit for you can be overwhelming. Liz makes that process fun and easy. Reach out to Liz at lizwoodrealty.com and make your dream of living in New Orleans a reality. Many members of our Facebook community have done just that, and they're thrilled with their new homes. You will be too. In fact, I went to a Christmas party. Everyone there had come to New Orleans through the podcast and through Liz. So that was a pretty neat experience. It was a little bit weird experience, to be honest, but it was pretty neat that everybody in that room was a New Orleanian now because they listened to the show and because they connected with Liz. So when you're ready to make New Orleans your home, reach out to Liz. While you're looking for a home, you're probably going to need to secure financing, and that's where Tommy Manzella at Gulf Coast Mortgage comes in. Let him help you get everything in place. We did that on our refinance a couple years ago, and it was as smooth as could be. And then we went through the same process with Tommy when we were considering purchasing a new home, and it was just as easy. Again, many members of the community have worked with Liz and Tommy. They've had great experiences with both. When you're ready to look for your financing for that new home, or if you're moving in the city, check it out, Tommy Manzella at Gulf Coast Bank, and you can find links to connecting with Tommy in the show notes over at beyondbourbonst.com/199. Longtime listeners are familiar with Two Chicks Walking Tours and their small group approach to public walks through the Garden District and the French Quarter. For those new to the topic, they limit their group size to half the number of guests of other companies. Frequent tour takers know that size matters. Those smaller groups really allow them to personalize it more, to connect with you more, to know about your interests, and to really have a more interactive experience than some of the big groups. Two Chicks are also experts at curating private tours, including a variety of themes such as literature tours through the French Quarter and a Marigny Highlights tour option. The team has also traversed the CBD and warehouse district with groups in tow discussing the city's unique development and characteristics. They've organized private tours for as few as a single guest to over 200, so check them out. Find out more at twochickswalkingtours.com. and use code BEYOND to save 15% off. And again, we'll put a link in the show notes. So now we'll jump into the main body. We've done, many of these Q&A episodes. So the way this works is that if you're a Patreon supporter, your questions come first. I certainly appreciate it. And that's just one small way of saying thank you. And then we solicit questions from our Facebook group, the Beyond Bourbon Street Crew, K-R-E-W-E. And so we have some of both questions. Right up front, I wanted to say I had hoped and expected to have my wife Marie on with me. She was a requested guest. It's been a while since she's been on, but unfortunately, she's still recovering from either the flu or a cold, and she's got this hacking cough and really didn't want to subject you guys to that. So there's one or two questions that were specific for her, and I have interviewed her to get her feedback on that. So without further ado, let's start with our Patreon questions. First up is from Jeffrey Hubbard. Mark, I'm heading out solo on Amtrak for French Quarter Fest. While the fest is free this year, they have a four-day pass option, but it is pricey, $449 plus fees. Worth your opinion. So I don't know anything about the new pricing option. French Quarter Fest has always been free, and from my lens, that's what one of the things that makes it really a differentiator from Jazz Fest. So my gut feeling is, no, I wouldn't pay for a four-day pass option. I'm sure that probably gets you some seating and probably gets you some reserved spots. Maybe that gets you access to food and drink, but I'm not sure about that. But French Quarter Fest, the allure of it is that it is free and that it's easy to wander in and out from the stages, at least in theory. I mean, they get crowded, so sometimes people camp out and it's a little bit hard to move around. But compared to Jazz Fest, by and large, it's easy to come and go. And because they have venues all, or stages or concert venues all throughout the French Quarter, you can wander in and out. And that's the nice thing about it. And it's also nice that it's free, particularly as Jazz Fest has gotten pricier and pricier each year. I still love Jazz Fest, but that price is one of the differentiators for me. If I was going to pay this much money, I would go to Jazz Fest. So for French Quarter Fest, no, I think that you stick with the free option. You can always get a cheap bag chair. You can bring it obviously on the train, or you can stop in at, there's a Walgreens down in the French Quarter. You can buy a chair for 15 or 20 bucks, I think, or a beach towel, something like that would work fine. But no, I think the allure of French Quarter Fest is that it's free, and so it can be really inexpensive. You know, you can go out to eat beforehand, you could bring snacks. They obviously have great food vendors, so you know, and drink vendors, so you're going to spend some money, but you could do it theoretically completely free. Or you can certainly do it at low cost. From my lens, I wouldn't pay for a four-day pass, Jeff. I hope that helps. Joseph Griot. Hey, Mark, I'm coming down again for... And I should mention, I don't read most of these ahead of time. I scanned the ones that I knew were for Marie. But so this is the second one about French Quarter Fest. I'll be coming down again for French Quarter Fest and wonder if there'll be an update on your book prior to then concerning questions or things to do that may have been canceled or discontinued. I love your episode on the Do Drop In. Is it open yet or will it be open by April? So two things, no update on the book. I'm recording this in January 2024, and I'm hoping to hear this month if the publisher wants to pick up the option to do the second edition of the book. If we do that, my guess would be at this point it would come out probably in the spring or summer of 2025. So no update coming yet. I will say, having now become a travel guide author, it is one of those things that's frustrating as you drive around the city and you go, oh, that place closed, or that place moved, or these new places open that I'd like to think about putting into the book. But I guess that's life of a travel author. So no update there on the book. Hopefully I'll know soon, but certainly won't have an update out in time for French Quarter Fest, Joseph. And then your second question about the Do Drop In. I think it's on a month-to-month kind of holding pattern. They had hoped to be open when I recorded that in October, November. And now here we are in January. We drive by it almost every day on our way to pick up or drop off the kids from school and keep waiting. And it looks done. Most of the work on the outside is cleaned up. Most of the repair trucks or contractor trucks are gone. The street's cleaned up. The sign is up. There's a kind of a cover over the sign. But other than that, it looks ready to go. I need to reach back out and ask and maybe get an update I can put in the Facebook group. But I would hope that it's open by April. And gosh, I know they must hope it's open by April. So that was a fun episode, if you missed it, about the Do Drop In, kind of the history and the resurgence of it, the restoration of it, and what they're doing to get that back open. Mark Wingfield asks or says, we'll be there in late March to celebrate 25 years of marriage. Congratulations, Mark. I have my own list of places, but I'm curious about your thoughts on most romantic places to eat, drink, and see in New Orleans. I've asked a similar question before, but I'm particularly interested in Marie's answer. Bonus question, where's a great place to renew our vows? So, I have Marie's answers here. Marie mentions that she is not a romantic person. I could have told you that, but she's not. However, she had a couple ideas for places to renew your vows. One is in City Park on a bridge with an officiant. Another is in Audubon Park at the Tree of Life, which is kind of on the side of the zoo. It's outside of the zoo, but it's a popular place for people to get married. Both of those would be very picturesque, and there are multiple other places in both City Park and Audubon Park. So I actually like both of those suggestions. James Cullen, who I'm going to mention later, but who does many, many things, but among them was a photographer for my book, is an officiant, so he would be somebody to reach out to. I am also an officiant. I need to take one more step to get the, I have the registration with a church. I need to get the registration with the city, but I'm going to do that in the next month or so. So James or I would be an option. There are certainly others. In terms of places to eat, Marie and I talked about this. N7 would be a choice. It's mostly outside. There's about four or five tables inside. So if that's on your radar, it's French. It's hard to find. There's no sign or a tiny sign, but N, the letter N and the number 7, N7, is a pretty romantic spot. Definitely would require reservations. Marie added Clancy's, which is her favorite restaurant. Clancy's can be really noisy, but then if you sit upstairs, it's really quiet. And it's a neighborhood place, upscale neighborhood, I would say. Other places that come to mind, Brightson's is always on my short list for a nice dinner. August, super expensive, but really upscale, kind of fine dining in New Orleans would be another choice. So there's a couple for you. But I knew when I asked Marie this, she would say she wasn't romantic. Somehow we've made that work. Let's see, Mark has another question. We won't only be about the romance when we come in March. We also happen to be coming during the first week of March Madness, the NCAA basketball tournament, and we both love college basketball. I'm familiar with several good options outside the French Quarter. He mentions the Bulldog, Cooter Browns, and Manning's. But we are staying at the Bourbon Orleans this visit and would like a couple suggestions of good places to watch the games near there. Any come to mind? There is a new place on Burgundy that I haven't been yet, but it's called the Schooner Saloon, S-C-H-O-O-N-E-R. And it looks pretty nice. I tend to like places that are built for the purpose. And so the places you mentioned, particularly Cooter Browns. Cooter Browns is the best sports bar in the city, in my opinion. Lots of TVs, raw oysters, a very large beer menu, and really good pub food. Manning's is a really comfortable place with probably the most TVs and the biggest TVs in the city. The food's okay, and the beer menu is okay. I don't like it as much as Cooter Browns, but if I'm downtown, then that's a good location. So Manning's is probably the closest to you. You mentioned the Bulldog, and there's actually two locations of the Bulldog. There's one on Magazine Street that you're probably familiar with, and there's another one on Canal Boulevard in the mid-city Lakeview area. So I don't have any good ones besides Schooner Saloon. The problem I have with most of the quote-unquote sports bars in the French Quarter is they tend to be touristy places or tourist traps. They might have a TV or two on. They generally don't have the sound on. I just don't find them the best experience. And certainly as a New Orleanian, when I'm going out and want to go to a sports bar, I'm going to pick a place like Cooter Browns as opposed to going to the French Quarter for the purpose of watching sports. So it's one of my weak areas, I would say. But you might check out Schooner Saloon. They're brand new. They don't even have a website yet. But it looks pretty promising, and that's on Burgundy. So that would be at least worth walking over there or checking to see if a website pops up. You could take a look at that. Otherwise, I think, particularly if you're going to go spend a day watching games, Cooter Browns is the place to go. It really is. It has everything you want. You can take the streetcar to get there. You can hang out. You could plan dinner up there if you wanted at Louisiana Pizza Kitchen or Brightson's, kind of arranged there. You could go to Giacomo's. There's just so much to do in that part of the city. That's really close to my neighborhood. So that's what I'm familiar with. That's what I like. James Redman, we're planning a trip in August. I know it's kind of downtime in the city, but are there any festivals, events, etc. that happen around the third week of August? So August, of course, is hot and humid, James. So that's the thing you got to be prepared for. It's the combination of the two. I don't know about the third week in August, but there are a handful of events that happen in August that are worth checking out. So write these down and then just Google them and see what the dates are for 2024. First up is culinary. So it's a slow time of year for tourism in the city because it's so hot. And so it's one of the times of year, like at Christmas, where restaurants come together and put together fixed price, fixed course menus. So they call it culinary, C-O-O-L-I-N-A-R-Y. Lots of restaurants participate. Usually it's a 3-course meal. It varies a little bit by place. Many, many restaurants in the city have culinary menus. That's a great way to get out and sample some different places and try some different foods at a nice price. So that's something to keep in mind. I think that runs through all of August. In some places, some restaurants even run it longer, but in August. There's also the Satchmo Summerfest, which is a good music festival to go to. And then two other things I really like are one, White Linen Night. So again, I mentioned it's hot and humid, and one of the problems, of course, is staying out of the sun. So White Linen Night solves that because it's a nighttime event on Julia Street in the Warehouse District. Everyone wears their white linen. The art galleries are open. They have some live music. They have free drinks a lot of times, like a little spritzer of champagne or a glass of wine. You are near plenty of places to eat and drink, and you're dressed for it. That's the biggest thing about the weather is dressing for it. And so you're wearing linen, right? And it's nighttime and it's hot, but at least you have linen on and it's comfortable. That's a really fun event. The CAC, the Contemporary Arts Center, is down there, and they usually have some things going on as well in conjunction with White Linen Night. But that's a fun thing to do, and that's a free event. And then the other thing that happens in August is the Red Dress Run. That's usually, I think, the second week, but you might check the date. And so the Red Dress Run is our answer to the running of the bulls in Pamplona, Spain. So people dress up in red dresses, both men and women, and they run through roller girls, so women on roller skates and roller blades, who thump them with, think of those plastic red bats that you might have played with as a kid. You know, they're kind of hollow, but they're plastic, so they thump people with plastic bats and things like that while you're running. So instead of being gored by a bull, you get thumped by usually a woman on rollerblades or roller skates. So it is more fun than maybe I'm making it out to be, but those are a handful of events. So you have the culinary dinners, you have Satchmo Summerfest, you have White Linen Night, and you have the Red Dress Run. Hannah Voss says, the last time I was in New Orleans, I saw many buskers had QR codes along with traditional chip jars. I'm curious to know if that has helped or hurt their income, and which do they prefer? I don't believe you've done an episode on buskers. Is this in the future? So that's been on my list for a long time. There's actually a busker festival, too, on the North Shore that's very popular. I think the biggest challenge I've had with buskers is I have in my head what I want to do, and it requires quite a bit of legwork to go out and find buskers and get them sort of, they're not rule followers by definition, so it's a little bit hard if I want to do a panel with buskers. I've also wanted to interview Doreen Ketchins for years. She's a busker that's just an amazing clarinetist. So that's been on my list. It's still on the list, Hannah. I'll move it up a little bit and see if I can't make that happen. I don't know which is better for them. I can only imagine cash is probably better for street buskers for probably obvious reasons, but I'm sure that QR codes are sort of a sign of the times, right? And so you get a lot of people, including myself, that don't often have cash with you. If you have a phone, though, and almost everyone has a phone with them, you can snap a QR code and Cash App or Venmo or whatever it might be, some money to them. So I'm sure it's helping. You know, like anything, they're business people and entrepreneurs, and they're trying to keep up with the time. So I think that's probably why you're seeing more of that. DC Big Papa. Mark, you know how much I love you and the podcast. Your experience riding in a certain crew, an air quote, last Mardi Gras prompts this question. What are some of the easier Mardi Gras crews to get into and join as members? So, and then he mentions they had their 12th night celebration in DC with the Haydell's King Cake. Good choice. Good choice. Yeah, Robert. So the organization I rode in is a sort of closed organization by invitation, and I went as a guest rider, and so I won't get much into that. But that is really the exception. There are a handful of organizations like that, but almost all of the Mardi Gras parades are open to the public, meaning you go to their website, you see what the criteria are to sign up. In some cases, there's a wait list, particularly for Muses. And I'm not sure about Iris, but definitely Muses is one that has a wait list, female crew. But you go to the website, check out what their sign-up procedures are. Dues range anywhere from a couple hundred dollars to into $1,500 to $2,000. Most are in the couple hundred dollar range. And there are Mardi Gras crews for everyone. There are male-only crews, female-only crews, co-ed crews. There are old line Mardi Gras crews that tend to be pretty exclusive. There are super crews like Bacchus and Muses and Endymion. There are daytime parades and nighttime parades. As I was thinking about this question a few minutes ago, King Arthur, I think, is a really good popular choice that fits the bill for a lot of people. It's a co-ed crew. It parades during the day, maybe just into dusk, if I remember correctly. It runs the whole uptown route, which means that it comes down Jefferson Avenue to Magazine Street, Magazine Street to Napoleon, and then Napoleon to St. Charles, and then downtown. So it's a long route, which I like. I like that first part that goes on Jefferson and Magazine. That's a very family-friendly part. And then you get into the traditional part of the route. And I think that's a fun thing as a rider to see the change in the crowd. So that's fun. Plus, again, it's co-ed. So I happen to know that you travel with a large group of friends for Mardi Gras, probably looking to do this with friends of both sexes. And so King Arthur would be one I would look at. Morpheus is another one. Morpheus rides on the Friday night before Mardi Gras. It's a nighttime parade. I've ridden in it before. It's pretty fun. I think I might pick King Arthur over it, but I think Morpheus would be my choice if I were coming from out of town and looking for a reasonably priced crew to join that's pretty easy to join and rides at night. King Arthur is, I think, a bigger parade and rides during the daytime, so that's a difference there. But just Google the crew that you're looking for, go to their website, you'll find a place to sign up or see whether they have a waiting list or if they have, you know, dues and how that works. So I hope that helps, and I am looking forward to seeing you not too far away. This is a short carnival season, y'all. I think it's 39 days. So that means shoving a lot of king cake in a short period of time, and also parades will start in just a couple weeks. So now we're going to move on to our Facebook questions from our Facebook crew. And if you're not a member of that, that's completely free. It's the Beyond Bourbon Street crew, K-R-E-W-E. We have about 15,000, almost 16,000 people. So it's, you know, it's a small town, or I guess bigger than a small town. It's a small city. Lots of people there, very active. So that's a good place to both share your memories of New Orleans and also get your questions answered. Let's see. Michael Kaufman says, if you could visit anywhere way beyond Bourbon Street in the United States that you have never been, where would you go and why? So Marie's favorite place is Hawaii. So I asked her, I think the only island she hasn't been to is Molokai. I think so. But she said she would like to go to Yosemite or Yellowstone or the Grand Canyon, one of the national parks out west. I've been with Marie 20-something years, and I was a little surprised to hear her say it. But that's where she would like to go. She also knew the answer, my answer to the question, because again, we've been together so long. It's Acadia National Park in Maine. Never been there, have always wanted to go. It just looks so incredibly beautiful. I don't really have a bucket list, but I guess if I did, that would be on it. So there you go. The national parks out west for Marie and Acadia National Park for me. And I'm always looking for way beyond Bourbon Street podcast episodes, right? So like one of the places I want to go outside of the United States is I want to go up to Nova Scotia and meet with somebody up there that can talk to me about the Acadians and their migration, immigration down to Louisiana. But I would love to go up there and do an interview up there and then also do an interview down where I went to college in Lafayette, Louisiana. So that would be a way beyond Bourbon Street episode. Eric Boyle congratulates me on the anniversary. I think I told someone it's 9 years, and I think it's actually 8 years of the podcast. So the first episode was released on either December 30th or December 31st, 2015. I have lately been having trouble counting. So that would make it 8 year anniversary or into our 9th year. Those people that pay close attention might have noticed, I think on the last episode, I called that episode 199. It was actually 198, so I may need some remedial math, I'm not sure. But Eric says, congratulations, you've provided so many hours of entertainment and a wealth of information in Lanyap. I'd be curious, what are the best documentaries about New Orleans? And of course, Katrina is a huge, important, tragic part of New Orleans, but some films not focused on that as well. Thank you again for all your hard work and dedication. Laissez le bon temps rouler. Thanks, Eric. You know, I think in terms of Katrina, Spike Lee's work, When the Levees Broke, I think is really the most impactful one for me. I haven't watched it in many years, but I thought when I saw it, I thought he really nailed it. He got it right. One of the people he interviews in that went on to be in the HBO series Tremé and had a major role in it. I don't think she was an actress prior to that, but he interviewed her on the steps of what was left of her house, and I'm sorry, I'm drawing a blank on her name, but she's one of the main characters. So in terms of Katrina, I think that's it. Instead of specific names, I'm going to give you a resource for others. There is the local public television station, WYES, has a series of probably 36 or more documentaries about the way they were or the way things were. And so they do by decade, they do Mardi Gras, they do restaurants, they do streetcars. There's a ton of them. And I think if you're a Passport member with public television, you can then pick a station. So let's say you live in Boston, but you wanted to look at New Orleans. I think you can switch it over to New Orleans online And then you have access to the things that are unique about that public station. So that's actually a really great way to see documentaries, by the way, the Passport, which is about $60 a year, I think. But I know that WYAS sells DVDs of their of these The Way They Were series, or the way, I think it's The Way They Were, or The Way It Used to Be. I can't remember, but it's something like that. At one point, we had most of them, and they were destroyed in Katrina, actually, but they've continued to make them, and they pretty regularly broadcast them. I see them here locally, but I think that was one of the reasons I got the Passport level of access, because I wanted to go back and look at some of them. So there are dozens, easily three dozen that they've done. Again, New Orleans in the 30s or 40s, New Orleans, different decades. The Mardi Gras one, I remember. I remember restaurants that were. So there's a lot of them. And that's what I would really recommend. So the Spike Lee movie for Katrina, and then WYES, I think it's WYES.org. If you go look there on their website, you can probably dig in a little bit and find some of the documentaries, and then figure out how to do it as a Passport member or reach out to them. But really good. They're usually an hour to 2 hours long. I've been watching them for 20 or 30 years. So they've been making them at least that long. I don't know how often they come out, but like at Mardi Gras, they will usually run the Mardi Gras that was. That's maybe what it's called. The whatever it was that was. So at Mardi Gras, they usually run that one because we'll record it or watch it then. But that's what I would look at. WYES. I hope that helps. John Nordyke. Hey, Mark, can you discuss the process of writing your book about the city from ideas to publication? Obviously, a Reader's Digest version, or maybe this is an episode idea. Well, lucky for you, John, I did that back in episode 157 with James Cullen. James, among other things, was the co-photographer, if you will. I took some of the photography for the book, and he took some of the photography for the book. He did an amazing job. He also does interviews, mostly publication, written publication interviews. So he goes out and interviews people and publishes. So he asked to interview me on my show, and we did that in episode 157, and really kind of went into the process of writing the book and some of the ideas that came up and some of the challenges. So go back and check that out, and I'll drop a link in the show notes to that. And then John has a second question. Where are we at with the James Lee Burke interview? And I got to admit, John, this one fell off my radar. I had reached out a while back to James Lee Burke's, I think, literary agent, hadn't heard anything, and then just sort of let it drift away. That's one that I want to get back on the list, like the Street Busker interview. I was thinking about this morning. James Lee Burke is intimidating to me because he's written so much, and I've read most of his books. I haven't read all of them, or most of the books that are set in Louisiana. He has a different series set out west, but I've read most of the books set in Louisiana, not 100% of them, but that's intimidating to me that I don't know that I know them well enough. I mean, I'm looking at six or seven of them in the stack right here. I don't know that I know any of them well enough to go line by line through them with him, but I certainly know the characters and know the stories. I don't know why that one feels intimidating. I've interviewed lots of authors, but anyway, I will get that back up the list, John, and see if I can't reach out again and make some progress there, because he does interviews. He's getting older, but he does still do interviews periodically, so. Maggie McGyver. I hope I'm saying your last name right, Maggie. I wanted to tell you how much I love your book. One thing that isn't mentioned often are the fantastic photos. Oh, again, we were just talking about that, so thank you, Maggie. I took, I think, about 60% of the pictures that ended up in the book I made, and the rest James made. And it was really deliberate on my part to select James, or to ask James, to hire James, if you will, to make photos for the book. I was a fan of his work. We're friends. I knew that he's a professional photographer. I'm not. But he has such a way of capturing people that I think is one of the best in the city at doing it. And I just wanted that kind of perspective in the book. You know, you have a whole book of me writing and me giving you advice on what to do and eat and see and drink and all of that. And you had my lens through the camera as well. And I just wanted a different perspective. And I thought for a while about, well, how do I do that? And I finally arrived on the idea of, well, I could do that through photography, by another person's lens, if you will, on the city. And I love James's eye. I just love the way he captures emotions of people, particularly. There's a photograph in the book, I think, where there's a man riding a bike on the Crescent Park Trail. The sunlight just bounces off a certain way. And I just thought, boy, I can never capture that. that image. I could never make that photo. And that's one of many that I really love. His work on Mardi Gras Indians is really great. He's known in the community, so people know him and are more than happy to have him make their pictures when they're in their suits. And so you could check him out at theaccidentalcajun.com. And I'll put a link in the show notes to that if you want to take a look at his artwork, either to hire him or to purchase his artwork. But thank you for mentioning the pictures in the book, because that was important to me. When I looked at a lot of other travel books, it looked like often the pictures were just kind of add-ons, if you will, or the same old sort of exactly what you would expect pictures. And I wanted to make the book immersive. And by the same token, I wanted the photographs to be immersive. So I wanted you to be drawn in by the photographs as well as the writing, of course. So thank you, Maggie. I appreciate that. That also reminds me, something just jumped in my head when Mark asked the question earlier about romantic places in the city. I did a recent episode on View Orleans, and that's a place that is, I don't think that it's open at night. I want to say it's open till 5 or 6, but I sort of think of that as romantic, as going up to the highest perch in the city that you can get to and seeing this really great 360-degree view of the skyline of the city. So I would kind of put that in the romantic category. I think it's a pretty neat spot. So sorry about that. I just popped into my head. Christy Johnson. I don't know if there's already an episode on the subject, but I'd be interested to hear about why New Orleans holds the appeal/magic mystique that it does for so many people. I have traveled a fair bit, and the only other place that I have seen this kind of fascination with a place city culture is France, Paris in particular. They even have a name for it, Francophiles. I have often wondered what the equivalent name would be for people who become deeply enamored with New Orleans. What is it about the city that makes people fall in love and want to go back again and again? So, Christy, it's a great question. I agree with you about France and Paris specifically. I've not done a particular episode on it. I've done a couple of things I would do now or things I love about the city. And I sort of would like to believe that the podcast as a whole is sort of my love letter to the city and trying to capture that essence that you're describing. I often tell people that I feel like it's the humidity. It seeps into your pores. You know, this the things that are unique about the city seep into your pores, and once they get in, they can't get out. I think that's why you see so many people come here and fall in love here and want to move here. You know, that's why Liz is a sponsor of the show, because so many people ask me, they come, they fall in love with the city, they want to move here, either part-time or full-time. I think it's the culture. It's a big part of it. You know, New Orleans is often described as the northernmost point in the Caribbean. It's often described as the most European city in America. And I think both of those things are true. You know, so you have this culture, this Caribbean culture, this European culture. You have this blend of ethnicities. You have the music, you know, going all the way back. You have, you know, going back to the days of slavery, as horrendous as that was, one of the very few things that those people got to keep was their music. And you think about Congo Square and the music that came out of Congo Square, and that has really kind of lived on. And then again, the Caribbean vibe and all of that. So our musical culture, jazz, of course. You know, more recently you have bounce as another musical genre that essentially was created in New Orleans. So I think you have the music, you have the food, again, that slamming together of European and Caribbean culture and ingredients. Again, the enslaved and what they brought in terms of their food and, you know, just all of that coming together. I think the food, the music, the culture, the people, it's just very unique. You know, and I've been fortunate, like you, to have traveled quite a bit and been in many places, both across the world and in the United States. And I'm certainly biased, but there is something unique about the culture here and all those things in the city. Now, there's a flip side of that, that sometimes you guys don't see when you come to visit, and I'm thankful for this, and that is sort of the problems of the city, the crumbling infrastructure, the difficult politics, the crime sometimes, the lack of leadership, just high taxes, high insurance. You know, there's some things that when you kind of rub past the veneer that are tough. But I think the reason most of us that choose to stay is because when it's good, I mean, this sounds corny, but a good day in New Orleans is better than a great day most other places, in my opinion. And a great day is sublime. And I know that sounds corny, but I very much feel that way. For all the frustrations and the things that the city isn't and the flooding and all the difficulties, a great day at Jazz Fest with a beer in my hand and Marie at my side, and it's been hot as heck and you're dirty and grimy, and then the sun breaks and you're at the big stage seeing an act just bring joy to you. I think about Jimmy Buffett so many times, but many, many others. Those days make it worthwhile. Riding on Mardi Gras Day in a parade and getting to see the joy of a million people in the streets and enjoying themselves and their families and their friends, or being in that crowd myself, both views of those are truly terrific days for me and days where I go, this is worth it. Even a nice afternoon sitting on my front porch, surrounded by live oak trees cascading over the street as cars pass by, and being up kind of removed a little bit and being able to sit back and smoke a cigar and drink a sip of bourbon or a beer and just enjoy the kind of smells of the oak trees and the sounds of the city. Pretty close by, I can hear marching bands this time of year practicing for parades as I'm sitting out there. And those kind of things happen. And, you know, walking through the French Quarter and hearing the calliope from the steamboat Natchez, wandering up on a second line, seeing Mardi Gras Indians. I could go on and on and on, but I think those things kind of give you a flavor of there's just so much that's unique. We're in carnival right now, carnival season, so there's king cake on my countertop upstairs. You know, and those are things we almost take for granted. That also means that it's crawfish season or the beginning of crawfish season. So, you know, there's a rhythm to the city that I think is unique, particularly in the United States. There are lots of places that are cleaner, neater, better infrastructure, more organized, safer. I could go on and on. And I've lived in many of those places. We've lived in a lot of cities, Marie and I. But they don't compare when it comes to the culture and the amount of options we have when we walk out our door to hear live music, to get just truly great food. Even a neighborhood place doesn't last long if it doesn't have great food. And so the average level of food is so good in the city. The average level of music is so good in the city. Then you add things like our festivals almost every week throughout the year, the music and the variety of music that's available to you, all those things, Mardi Gras. I just think that's a unique combination that you just don't have anywhere. In terms of a name, I don't know. You know, New Orleanian, I think, is the name. But it's interesting that you bring up Francophile. So I'm not sure if there is a name for those of us that love the city, whether you're here or not. But that's a really interesting question. So that, I think, wraps it up. Let me take a look. I appreciate everyone that submitted questions. I certainly appreciate my Patreon supporters who contribute some every month to helping financially, to helping us continue the podcast. But I also appreciate those of you in the Facebook group that are super engaged and take the time to ask questions. So thank you for that. A special thanks again to my Patreon supporters. It's been a year where there's been some drop-off. I just think people have felt a pinch a little bit. And so I appreciate those of you that have stuck with me and those of you that have joined. If you got something out of today's episode and you want to leave a tip, I'm at Beyond Bourbon ST on both Venmo and PayPal. And with that, I'll turn it over to my daughters to close us out. Thanks, y'all.
New episodes are available every other Wednesday. If you're enjoying the podcast, please share it with someone else who loves New Orleans as much as you do. Until next time, laissez le bon temps rouler.
Thanks for listening to the Beyond Bourbon Street podcast. Find us anytime at BeyondBourbonST.com.